Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Freaks and Geeks. If you haven't already, join our community of like-minded geeks over at our Facebook page. Go ahead and smash that like and let us know what your interests are. Let us know what you think of our little community that we're building. We love talking to our listeners, and I think that you'll find that we are composed of some pretty badass folks. Tonight, I am joined by my spiritual Shin Yu.
Oh, konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa, yes. And my jinsei no patona, Stacy.
I have no idea what you're saying, but I'm going to assume that it is not insulting. Hello, everybody. Konnichiwa.
Oh, you know, I found that it's best not to assume in these cases. You know what I'm saying? Just go with
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have I'm being hesitant.
Well, just trying to get into the spirit here. We're going to Japan. I've always wanted to go to Japan, and here we are. So I also am joined by my Chin Sana Ai no Usagi, Chris.
Yeah, I don't know what it means, but she was practicing for a long time yesterday, which is pretty funny. Okay. yeah. Konnichiwa, bitches.
Thanks. So tonight we are going to take a hop, a skip, and a jump across the world to beautiful Japan to talk about a place that is very near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, that's right. This is your number one bucket list paranormal location, right?
It is. It absolutely is. If I could ever travel to one place in the whole world and just be in that environment and investigate or not investigate, just to be there, I would most certainly travel to Aokigahara. A lot of people talk about it as a place full of phantasms and gore and all this like dark and dank stuff. But to me, it's none of that. If you've ever looked at pictures of Aokigahara, it's this incredibly lush, super green, sacred place. I love the forest in general. Like, one of the biggest things that I miss here in Texas is just trees and green, the color green. We don't have that here.
We have it in our
Everything's brown.
Everything is very brown. Not a whole lot of tones other than brown. So Aokigahara to me would be the top of my list, and it's for a myriad of reasons. Just the place in and of itself, not the least of which is the overall spirituality in Japan. It's like they are just by nature of being Japanese and what they're grown up in their culture closer to the spiritual plane than any of us are just off the bat.
She also wants to visit it because it's close to where I was born.
Oh, for sure that. For sure that. For definite.
I mean, it's likely that comes along with ancient traditions and the fact that Japanese have a real strong connection to their past. I mean, if you look at like traditions that, you know, you look at the samurai back in feudal Japan, or, I mean, you even go back as recent as like World War II. I mean, you can see like just the reverence they have for their history.
Yeah.
Pretty badass.
Definitely.
Well, yeah, definitely. And I think a large part of the mystique though here is that even in such a beautiful place, tragedies seem to occur fairly regularly. I think we would be remiss if we didn't kind of open and close this episode with a special message about suicide and its effects.
Yeah, that's definitely true, Stacey. You know what I'm saying? We want to make sure that before we begin talking about Aokigahara and all of the mysteries that we mentioned, the suicide hotline, you know, when we did our suicide episode, we definitely mentioned that as, you know, a big resource for people. We want to let you know that if you're having thoughts or feelings, you know, about hurting yourself, or maybe you know somebody that might be having these thoughts, you know that there are people ready to listen to you or maybe that person that you know. I know here at the show, our support of the American Federation of Suicide Prevention is something that we're really proud of. In fact, this past fall, we managed to raise over, you know, $700 for AFSP during one of our ghost hunts, you know.
That's woohoo!
Pretty good amount, I'd say.
Yeah, we finally got the numbers in, let's see, earlier this week. And it was for the basically ghost hunting day that we did, the international ghost hunting day.
World's
largest ghost hunt that we did that Carrie and Chris took part in. And we apparently did really, really well. We brought in, I think our goal was like 500 and we ended up with 700. So that's pretty
awesome. That's
awesome.
Carrie, did we ever describe what our little hunt was like? I don't remember if we did that on the show.
No, I don't think we got into it.
Well, what was it like? Well, now we have to know.
Well, I mean, I know.
Now I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
I know for my part, it was, you know, just the fact that it was a creepy cabin in the woods. I mean, if the lore being true, which I assume it was, I mean, it was right smack in the middle of Union and Confederate forces, like that were a mile away from each other or something like that. So, I mean,
yeah, it's right in the middle of a battlefield.
This place has definitely seen some shit.
Yeah. And then there were also some tragedies there at the cabin that weren't related to the Civil War necessarily.
That was the house that was next to it. Assaulted sexually his sister and murdered her. Isn't that it?
Yes. She was 12 years old.
That's terrifying and terrible.
So what did you guys experience during this hunt? Did you guys find anything?
We had some interesting EVPs, you know, that were reviewed while we were doing it. Some whispering and stuff like that. It was, I just got a bad vibe.
I actually had something happen equipment-wise that I have never experienced before or since. I mean, it was pretty recent, back in September, but my camera started taking pictures by itself. Just the camera on my phone. We were in the guy that committed the murder. We were in his bedroom asking questions, and my camera started taking pictures by itself. I wasn't touching the screen, anything. And then it did it again in the basement. And I also learned that my 10-year-old daughter, who I took with me, is a much better investigator than I am. She was listening back to EVP. She was recording live in the moment. I was very impressed.
It was very fun. The last thing that we'll mention about it is that at the last place that we did go, me and Carrie did have like non-EVP, like heard in the moment, somebody whispering.
A disembodied voice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I thought it was me like being like, oh, it's that dude over there. And then Ryan was saying, is that you? It's like, no. Carrie's like, no, it's me. Dude's next to Carrie. No, it wasn't me. Like, oh, okay. That's how it's going.
I would have been running. I would have ran my ass off to get the hell out of there. Oh my God.
It came from like the space between us where no one was standing.
The space.
Oh, that's
between.
Weird.
Yeah.
I would have shit my pants.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. We're had by all.
And it was for a great cause.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, back to that. For anyone listening who needs it, the suicide prevention hotline number here in the U.S. is 1-800-273-8255. And for those who don't want to talk and would rather text or chat, they do offer a chat option. Also, if you're international, hit us up and we will 100% help you find resources for your respective country.
Yeah, there's a ton of them. There's actually, if you Google it and you look on Wikipedia, there's a list on Wikipedia of every suicide hotline for every major country. Like some of the smaller countries don't have anything, but most of the major countries will have their number placed up all there, or a website that you can go to. And usually on the websites, they'll enable you to chat or whatever. There's no judgment. Just, you know, take care of yourself.
It's all about getting out.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, but that's the bottom line, is there's always somebody there to listen. So there's definitely help available.
Yep. All right. So now that we have gotten that heavy stuff out of the way.
Meat and potatoes.
Meat and potatoes. Let's begin at the beginning. We are going to take you all the way back to the year 864 when Mount Fuji erupted in a bedlam of fire and lava, extending highly enriched volcanic soil down the mountain's northwestern side. Years of growth from this eruption have turned the forest near Mount Fuji's base into a beautiful sea of trees, or Zukai. For this reason, this forest is often known as Zukai Forest, or Aokigahara Zukai. There's actually about three or four other names for Aokigahara as well. It seems like, and this is something that is my bad, I'm sorry guys, if you're listening and you are fluent in Japanese, my busy. I tried to do what I could with translations, but it seems like Japanese is a very complicated, complex, language. And I don't 100% understand why there are so many different translations of one forest. So if you have that answer, I would love to hear it. Like, hit me up for real, because I want to know why, like, in which one is the most proper. So if we're not using the most proper one, please excuse us. But there's a lot. Just like there's a book we're going to talk about, and that book has like three or four different other names.
I think Japanese ranked about it is the most difficult to learn.
I thought that was Russian.
I think English is the most difficult to learn.
Yeah, well, I guess that. I guess it would be probably English. I have heard so many people say that.
Why do you have five different variations of the same word?
There. It's all different.
Here's the thing. I have not mastered any of them. So, yeah. The only English I'm really good at is bad English. Oh, and Pittsburghese. I can speak that real well.
Yeah, I got that hillbilly patois going.
I don't know what I got.
You get that Richmond, that deep south Richmond.
Is that what it is?
Something like that, yeah.
I don't know. It get me angry and the twang comes out.
Mm-hmm. I know. Don't I know it?
Yeah, do that to April, too.
So the forest itself is vividly bright green with craggy rocks and caves strewn throughout the forest. Serene and peaceful, lovely in its stillness, Aokigahara is a destination for many tourists and locals alike, each hoping to take a piece of the serenity home with them. But the forest is also known, and perhaps best known, for a much darker reason.
Yeah, apparently Aokigahara has one very grim factoid, and that is it is consistently listed as one of the most frequented places in the world for those who are looking to end their lives, which is really, really sad.
Yeah. No doubt. Sometimes Aokigahara is listed as number one, and it actually shares the top spot with several other notable locations. And depending on the year, depending on what has been happening over that year, they all kind of switch around. But in all reality, it's the top four kind of are always pretty much the same. The other ones are the Yangtze River Bridge in China, the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, and the Sunshine Skyway Bridge in Florida. So as far as Aokigahara goes, to the untrained observer, this seems to either be out of happenstance, so because it's a peaceful, secluded forest, or it's as a result of a publication in 1960, which is what is most often blamed for its popularity, but we'll get into that in two shakes.
I find it interesting that three, four bridges.
Well, I mean,
oh yeah,
I mean,
those bridges are all super high.
Yeah.
That's true.
For sure.
I mean, you can do one sick belly flop.
Oh my God, Christopher. No. Not okay.
I've never heard of the Skyway Bridge.
It's the big, it's the big bridge that connects Tampa. Let me look it up.
Yes, I've been on the Sunshine Skyway Bridge.
Yeah, isn't it the one that connects one half of Tampa to the other?
Yes, I think it actually goes over Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes over Tampa Bay because my older sister used to live in Florida, and I remember going across it, and oh, Lord, I was actually woozy going across it. It was so high. When you see it off in the distance, it looks insanely high, like just unnaturally high. Like, why would anybody drive over that? That's how high it looks. I think a crew, I may be wrong here, but I think cruise ships and stuff have to go underneath of it. That's part of the reason why it's so high. But I think it's also because of like the distance it has to span. I don't know. I'm just speculating here as to why it's so high. All I'm saying is that bridge is fucking high and it's horrible. Like,
yeah.
I can't imagine driving across it every day.
No, thank you.
There was actually a documentary that was made in 2006 called The Bridge that talks about suicide at San Francisco. And it also talks about the Skyway Bridge and the Yangtze River Bridge quite a bit as well within the documentary. But the main focus is the Golden Gate Bridge. And there is actually a jump survivor in that documentary. And it's really incredible to watch. So if you're ever feeling like you just can't get sadder and you want to be even more sad, that's the one to watch. It's really makes you think about the human condition and the burdens and the issues that we all carry around and how we cope or don't cope. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sad. Now I'm sad. Shit. Now I'm sad. Jesus Christ. All right, come on. Come on, Ghost. Let's go.
Hey, Chris. Yeah. Hit her up with some dulcet tones, man.
Yeah.
Cheer up your woman.
That'll do it.
It's going to be okay, baby.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Man, I am a lucky woman.
I don't know how you just walk around smiling all the time.
Oh, my God. Lucky. So luckiest. The luckiest woman. Can we go out and play that way? I'll just leave you out there.
Do I look like Charles Manson?
I'm just going to... You can go hang out with the cat guy.
I'm going to hang out underground in my doom buggy cult.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I make folk music. All right.
Oh, God.
Well, here we are.
Back to Japan. Allegedly, Aoki Gahara's place in dark prominence was secured many years before the release of the infamous book Tower of Waves by Seicho. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Matsumoto in 1960. Aoki Gahara is thought to be the site of Ubasute, or the ritual. See, I can do Japanese.
Right beside the word.
You've also put the pronunciation beside the word and other stuff, and I still fucked it up.
This is a true story.
Or the Ubasute, or the ritual of leaving elderly relatives in remote, desolate places to die. That is horrible. Legend has it that this practice over the years led to the presence of yurei in the forest. In Japanese folklore, yurei are thought to be spirits that harbor powerful emotions in order to transition from reikon, which are spirits, to a type of ghost seeking closure and to lay rest properly.
So, Ubasute, let's talk about it a little bit more. Ubasute is a ritual practice out of ancient feudal Japan. So, of course, you have to put yourself back in that scenario. Back in the day in Japan, there were a lot of mouths to feed, as you can imagine, and there was not that much supply on food. So what they would do is once a person reached a certain age, an old woman specifically, once they reached a certain age, their son would hoist them up on their backs, the son's backs, and then would carry them off into the woods. And then the mother, or the grandmother in some cases, as dutifully as she is toward making sure that her little babies come out of everything all right, would break off the branches of trees, of nearby trees, in hopes of marking the son's way out of the forest. The son would carry the old woman up to a secluded area of the forest and then would lay her down to die of exposure while following the path that she had made for him by breaking the twigs off of the trees out of the forest safely.
You just leave them there to die?
You just leave them there to die.
Starvation or wild animals?
Starvation, exposure, wild animals.
If they did it in the winter, I can attest that it gets very cold in Japan.
I mean, putting a female family member on top of a mountain for the gods to take is not strictly a Japanese practice.
That is also true. You're right.
I just find it odd that you drop them off and leave them there.
Wait a second.
The Northwest are female children.
Carrie, could you explain that? What? Who else does that?
Oh, I mean, in lots of ancient cultures, Norse culture, Greek culture specifically that I can think of, they would take unwanted female infants and leave them on top of a mountain as an offering to the gods. But also, we don't have time for all these female children.
Wow.
If you've been weak or sickly, you would have been discarded. Like Spartan men.
God.
Except for women.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that too. I mean, if you had a child that was some sort of disability or something like that.
And then they come back and, you know, as an adult, they thwart your plan to block the Persians.
Or they, in this case, Aokigahara, circling it right. Look at how artful this is. Just watch. Everyone watch how artful this shit is right here.
Watch on a podcast.
Watch it. Watch this. Or in Japan, they would die of any of the ailments we mentioned earlier, and then they would come back as Yurei, and they would be these, or Reikon, and they would be these angry spirits that couldn't rest because they have been just fucking discarded.
But and, they went peaceful.
Yeah. I think I would be pretty angry if somebody left me on a mountain to die. I'd be pretty pissed off about that.
It basically is the Japanese version of a banshee. Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think that's fair assessment.
Yeah. Well, in 1960, Seicho Matsumoto wrote the aforementioned book, Tower of Waves, or Nami no To. Tower of Waves was an extremely popular book in Japan at the time, and the book featured a star-crossed romance. Doesn't it always? This romance ended...
Romeo.
Yeah, I broke down the story of Romeo and Juliet to Kaylee the other night, and she didn't understand why people thought that was a great romance.
Nope.
Well, this romance ended, ultimately, when the heroine of the novel ended her life in a Okigahara, forever romanticizing the forest as a respite from all of life's tribulations and a place the forlorn and hopeless may end their suffering. Since the book's publication, there has been a marked rise in Aokigahara as the destination spot du jour for those hopelessly in love to end their lives. Often, a copy of Tower of Waves is found nearby.
Damn! So all this strategy can just be thrown onto one man?
No, it can't. It can't. So... everyone thinks that. Everyone is like, oh, it's because of Tower of Waves. It's because of Tower. You literally just fell into my trap. You literally did.
Well, I mean, you made it sound like, I mean.
You fell into the trap.
Do you think it would be in one of the top four spots if not for that book?
Maybe. literally, I said, before we even started talking about the book, I said that there's a book that everybody thinks contributed to the suicide, but may not really have done so much.
Does this surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all that this is us right now. Simply, I don't think that I think it was very influential, and I think that it definitely helped to popularize suicide in Aokigahara. But without Tower of Waves, do I think that it would have been a suicide destination anyway? Yeah, highly likely. So number one, you have Mount Fuji, which is a sacred spiritual place to begin with. Number two, you have quite a bit of spiritual associations going on within the forest itself. There's lots of monks and priests and all sorts of religious entities that exist either within the forest or just outside the forest. There's all sorts of stuff. Number two, the practice of Ubusute, which we just discussed it. That is the history of this location, is Ubusute. So it was already a place of sorrow and a place of, extreme sacrifice. What would be more sacrificial than going to commit suicide at a place that is known for sacrifice? Did I just go real crazy?
Yeah, you did.
A little. You're starting to sound like Chris.
Does everybody remember that picture she posted of me a few weeks back as April?
That was me.
Yes. Yes, that was exactly what was running through my mind. Right now, you are like the guy standing in front of the board with all the lines.
You're like Charlie in front of the board.
Going off. So this place had the odds stacked against. It was always going to be a place of despair. It didn't ever have a chance not to be. So we have all of history. 1960s happened. We have Sea of Trees, Tower of Waves. Jeez, I'm getting all mixed up.
Sea of Trees is a sequel.
Sea of Trees is the forest itself. But we have Tower of Waves, and then I'm actually going to tell you about a new one. Another novel, The Complete Manual of Suicide, was written in 1993 by Wataru Tsurumi. In this book, Tsurumi ruminates on the hardness of life in Japan and offers a number of final alternatives.
Why would you make this book? Why?
Giving people a way out, he thinks.
Maybe life is really hard, you know, over there. One of Tsurumi's recommendations was to die in Aokigahara, specifically. After this book was released, Aokigahara was forever cemented in its role as a final destination for hundreds every year. When a suicide victim is found in Aokigahara, folklore holds that the body is taken to a special room in the local police station. This room is always attended, and due to the belief that the corpse, if left alone, will scream throughout the night and move about on its own. It's just a creepy place with some creepy views, man.
So they're saying that the body will reanimate if it's left by itself?
Yes, and will scream all night long.
Well, it's good that Japan is an island. That way those zombies can't come and get us.
Zombies can go through water.
Am I dead and my body was left alone?
Just screaming.
You're in a police station in Japan right now.
Hurtling through the universe, screaming your head off.
Thanos snapped his fingers and we're all just screaming.
Here we are. Here we are.
But I don't comprehend why you'd want to write that book. It makes no sense.
I think it was...
Yeah, it sounds pretty bad.
I got you, man. I got y'all. So, the book, as much as the book is a legitimate how-to guide, because it is...
Suicide for Dummies?
I will say one, side note here, is that there are no copies of the Manual for Suicide in English. It's all in Japanese, and you can't get it. There's lots of like doctoral candidates and stuff that are trying to translate it, but to date, no
one
has.
Why would you even
want to
translate it? Burn it.
Well, I mean, it's just like a cookbook, but it's for
like a statistic cookbook.
That's really bad comparison.
I mean, you don't have to make the recipes to have the book.
I don't have a cookbook with the intent of not cooking anything in it.
I have plenty of cookbooks that have the intention of not cooking anything in it.
Look at these. These look delicious. I'm not going to eat them, but goddammit, they're good to look at.
I just like to collect books, as do a lot of people. So anyway, so as much as this is a manual for how to commit suicide, it really is, it's also a political statement. So this book comes out, and it's so terrible. It's so repugnant that all of these people are talking about it. And like Kim Kardashian, it starts to...
Got a big booty?
No. Oh. It does something terrible and it gains popularity from it. That's where I'm going. Anyway, so like this book...
Oh, man, that was a
super
burn.
Terrible. But the main message of this book is how hard life is in Japan. Period. And that no one is making things easier. So this is why we have this suicide problem, is because we have this fundamental belief that suicide is a respectable way out. And there's nothing that stops people from wanting to do that because life just sucks. So that's the purpose of the book, was that it was meant to make political leaders suddenly take notice of the trials and tribulations of the working class and just how fucked up life had gotten for them. So it has a real, it has a genuine purpose behind it.
So were there any, so you mentioned the political thing, is there any sort of response from like the Japanese government or anything once this book came out that you know of, you know, if you think like, you know, that was, did it cause any sort of reforms or anything? Were there any reforms? I'm just wondering if there was anything that happened as a result of this book that was, you know, maybe with the author's intent, as you pointed out, could be.
So I will say that, and I don't know that this is a direct result of the book, but I don't see how it could also not be. So I'm on the side that it is. The government has taken steps to address how culturally suicide is seen as this respectable way out. And it's also taken steps to address its serious lack of understanding of mental health and being in supporting people's mental health, as well as being concerned that they're being productive citizens. So they have definitely changed quite a bit. I don't think that it's where it needs to be, which is why Okigahara is still one of the number one destinations in the world for this, you know, terrible topic that we're discussing. But
right.
And at Okigahara as well, they place signs that talk about the value of life and how, you know, you were born, you were created for a reason, you need to think about your family, and whatever you think is wrong can fix, and all of these things. So I think that they have started to examine their cultural response to mental health issues.
When you look at the Japanese culture, like, they praise working nonstop.
And stiff upper lip, you know, like,
yeah.
Don't let your emotions show, like, don't lose control, that kind of stuff.
Which is something I think,
right.
Like, you're starting to see change due to... Oh, then never mind. The noise is outside. It's like, what the hell is that?
It's a uri.
Yeah. But, I mean, for the longest time, I mean, you look at seppuku, where, like, if you do something dishonorable, the way to go was to really kill yourself.
Yeah.
So, it the biggest thing is...
I think the
biggest thing is just the change in culture. You know, that, I mean, it's not something that's going to happen overnight. It's going to take very, very long time to fix, but you know, at least it's progress.
Yeah.
Steps are being made.
Well, so I guess the forest close proximity to Mount Fuji, like you said, April, it seems to amplify the spirit activity in that area. There are Buddhist monks, I guess, that frequent the forest, and they have set up altars in order to try and combat the evil spirits haunting the forest and inspiring people to kill themselves. Different, you know, influence of a book. One Buddhist monk named Fukui was visiting the forest to set up an altar when he told the New Zealand Herald, "The spirits are calling people here to kill themselves. The spirits of the people who have committed suicide before."
Well, because of Aokigahara's dark reputation, it isn't inconceivable. The paranormal has permeated its mineral-rich soil and taken root along with the trees. Many a wanderer has a paranormal experience within the forest, but, I mean, that is probably like, I mean, you're going into the forest where, you know, lots and lots of people have killed themselves. You're going to find something. It's like going into the sea and looking for a fish.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, okay, So Aokigahara, as much as we're talking about it right now, as being this place that is mysterious yet beautiful and a place of despair, all this stuff, like, as much as we're talking about that right now, in all reality, it's a huge forest.
Well,
people camp there. School children go on trips there. It's not all.
Well, no. I mean, it's,
you know, like,
it's one of the. I mean, one of the things about it is not only that is it a place where people go to, unfortunately, end their lives, but I mean, it's a huge, dense forest that apparently. Some sort of weird magnetic pull that causes your compass to go batshit crazy.
Yeah.
But I mean, this portion of its history, well, this is a big ass portion of its history, but this is just one of the things associated with it, unfortunately. It's the one that kind of stands out.
Yeah.
Because it's the most macabre and the most unfortunate.
It's around history.
I mean, very much like the Golden Gate Bridge. Obviously, people go there as the tourist place, you know, beautiful views, all of that. But people also kill themselves there.
Yeah, you're right.
So what follows is a small consolidation of, I couldn't think of the word, of some of the more intriguing paranormal activity captured in the forest. And this is where we get to talk about my man crush, Josh Gates, because, you know, sorry, honey, but if Josh Gates came calling, I would leave you for Josh Gates.
I think that the two of you would have an epic, like, Super Saiyan battle over who got to leave with him.
I don't know. I think I would let Chris go with Josh Gates because it would be the closest that we ever came to the Lord of the Rings or the Hobbit being a real life scenario.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my Lord.
My Frodo?
You're the one with the worst feet, whichever one that is. You'd probably be Sam. Samwise Gamgee. You'd probably be Sam, and then Josh Gates would be Frodo.
I haven't been dropping no eaves. I'm a little late for trimming the verge.
I can't carry the ring, but I can carry you.
I don't know if I can carry Justin. I like to think that I've got some power in my legs, but I don't got that much power. He's a big boy.
I would just want to see that happen.
Just try to pick him up and I'll fall over. So, Josh,
I'm sure Josh is enjoying this.
I have some lightweight hiking gear and I'm ready to go out into the forest. So, you know, just give me a call and
he literally has an outfit that he calls his Josh Gates outfit.
And I had a hat. It came with a hat and then my dog ate it. I was very upset.
Maybe Josh Gates will send you a hat.
I would love a hat.
This very
yeah,
bad.
Hit him up, Josh. Hit him up, Josh, and make his day.
I will. I would be giddy like a schoolgirl.
Yeah. He literally has.
You're
he literally.
Like that when we're just talking about it.
I know. He literally has a telescoping walking stick.
Oh, well, I mean, it's for my camera.
Are you 75 years old?
Exactly.
It's a monopod. You screw it in the bottom of your camera, and then it helps stabilize the camera.
Sure, Gandalf.
Jelly. Jelly, I get all those fantastic photographs that I don't post online because everybody will think they're people.
Oh, we will talk about your theme issues later.
I don't think there's enough time here to talk about all of Chris's issues.
There is not, no.
That's an entirely separate podcast.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So, back to Josh. In 2008, he took the Destination Truth crew to Aokigahara in order to investigate claims that the forest was haunted. During the investigation, the crew picked up video evidence of a strange white form seeming to rise up from the earth itself near the base camp before sinking back down into the dirt. The form is human-like and spooked the crew, who continued to experience odd happenings and intermittent electrical issues throughout the night. Apparently, this sort of apparition is not unusual in Aokigahara, with many visitors claiming to see white figures drifting between the trees. For those interested, the show on Aokigahara can be found on Destination Truth's second season, episode number 17.
That's what we're watching tonight.
Destination Truth? I'm down for that.
Second season, episode 17.
I'm down for that. Honestly.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to watch that too.
Watching it is absolutely terrifying because you can no shit see it. Just it's a person. It is a freaking white person, like white gray. It just rises up out of the ground from nowhere, and then it just stands there for a second, like staring at base camp, and then it sinks back down into the dirt.
So would you say it has a similar form to what you guys caught when you went to the Beacon Theater and saw the thing on stage?
No. No, no, no. The thing on the stage walked across the stage.
I would have said more ran, but...
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it walked. But, like, it walked across the stage. This thing, like, literally was...
I'm saying, like, the appearance. That white,
no.
Grayish...
Still no.
This
was way more... Well, I don't know about solid, but it was way more detailed. Like, you could see eyes and lips and, like...
Yeah, we're going to have to watch this.
You could see.
Yeah. Hey, Kev, if you're listening, I will be going to bed late tonight because I'm going to be staying up to watch this. Sorry, honey.
The thing is once you watch one, you just get sucked into it.
Yeah,
you might fall asleep in the chair.
It's kind of like.
Is Destination Truth on Netflix right now? Or like Amazon Prime or Hulu?
Yeah, it's on Hulu.
Or not Hulu, sorry. It's on Amazon Prime, not Hulu.
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. It's also on YouTube, but I think you have to pay. It's on that YouTube Red or whatever. So, food for thought. You might
say,
be for free.
I get,
welcome to the Josh Gates podcast.
I mean, he also has another.
I get Hulu,
currently.
Amazon Prime, and Netflix. So, any one of those, it's, you know, how, like, they start the next episode while you're watching the last episode. I think it's Netflix that does that. It just automatically goes into the next one. Yeah, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite series of all time.
Well, he also has another series called Expedition Unknown, where he goes and searches out, like, historical mysteries and stuff. That's an excellent one, too.
He actually had one from Hampton, Virginia, where he was looking for Blackbeard's treasure.
Blackbeard. Mm-hmm. That's when April saw him.
Yeah, I did. Oh, no. Listen, Josh, if you're listening still or at all, I am so sorry. I am just socially inept and awkward. I am so sorry. I saw you and you saw me and you saw my face. and you saw the shapes my face was making at you and how shaky I got, and I was sweating and shaky, and I really acted like an idiot. So I'm so sorry. I promise you I'm a normal person, kind of.
She promises, Josh. You were safe. She wasn't going to hurt you. She was just going to whack out from surprise.
I'm not even upset that he, like, took one look at me and was like, we need to get the fuck out of here. Because no one else knew who he was. It was just me standing there staring at him like a weirdo.
Like you saw him at a Justin Bieber concert.
I truly regret that moment of my life. Oh, so embarrassing.
Well, maybe he'll listen to this and he'll realize how, you know, much we all love him, and he'll be forgiving.
Yeah, well, hopefully. He seems like a very forgiving man.
And so for himself.
Yeah, you know, that's part of his charm. So Rob Gilhooly of the Japan Times told of an incident where he heard a terrifying scream in the forest. When he went searching for the source of that noise, he came across the dead body of a man at the base of a tree. A quick examination revealed that the corpse had been dead for some time and could not have been the source of the scream.
Well, that's creepy.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I mean, not only do you get a disembodied voice, but then you also get the pleasure of walking upon a corpse.
Yeah.
That's a double whammy.
That's a double whammy.
Well, Elisa Sue, a staff writer for Mysterious Monsters, wrote about an encounter with an American couple who encountered a Buddhist monk along their trek. The couple was lost, and the Buddhist monk led them out of the formidable forest. When they rejoined their group, they were told that a Buddhist monk had taken up residence in the forest in order to stop people from ending their lives. According to Sue, no one had ever seen the monk outside of the forest, leading many to believe that the monk is a friendly spirit attached to the location. Kind of like a little guide there to help people out.
Yep, like Casper.
Casper the friendly.
Yeah, the friendly ghost.
Do you think he's like practicing his, you know, martial arts still?
Maybe.
I mean, that's what monks do, right?
I don't know.
I don't think that's the number one thing they do.
Yeah, I think they meditated and prayed a lot.
Right.
Like Shaolin temples, right? Yeah. If Kung Fu movies taught me anything.
And that's Chinese, so.
But not every monk is into martial arts, but some are.
You see the face?
Just like.
I'm very confused right now.
I don't know.
There's a very big difference in Japanese and Chinese.
All I'm saying is that monks are bald and Casper is bald. Coincidence? I think not.
I mean, I saw a monk in the airport in his traditional garb. I didn't immediately think he was a ghost.
Was he a monk or was he a Hare Krishna?
No, he was a monk.
How do you know he was a monk?
Because he didn't approach him.
He looked like the Dalai Lama.
Hare Krishna.
Was it the Dalai Lama?
No, it wasn't the Dalai Lama. I know what he looks like. This dude was not the Dalai Lama, but he was in that same kind of outfit.
Well, now I need to know what the Dalai Lama looks like.
He's an old...
You don't know what the Dalai Lama looks like?
I know what the Dalai Lama looks like.
Be careful.
I need to make sure that I know what the Dalai
Lama looks like. Be careful, he spits.
I mean, he looks like someone that would know.
Have there been other Dalai Lamas?
Yeah. It's just a title.
Oh, see, that's the part I was confused about.
Yeah,
it's a title, like, but the Dalai Lama is a reincarnation of past Dalai Lamas.
Oh my God, this man is so cute.
Oh my God. Yes,
perfect.
Exactly. So we're going to continue before.
He is so cute.
So, in spite of the forest's reputation as being silent, many EVPs are captured by paranormal investigators seeking to document their experiences in Aokigahara. Johnny, is that really Johnny Paranormal?
Is that really his name?
No, it's a no, it's a paranormal group that calls themselves Johnny Paranormal.
Okay.
I mean, I would assume it's not his real name.
So Johnny Paranormal, I can't even do it that way. Johnny Paranormal, this it just sounds like an insult. Oh yeah, did you catch some ghosts over there, Johnny Paranormal?
Chris, that's going to be your new nickname, Chris. We'll call you Johnny Paranormal.
So they visited Aokigahara in the summer of 2018 and captured more than 30 EVPs from the curious high to the more foreboding Forbidden Run and Worship Me. I'd hope... Did they capture them in English?
No.
So they captured that in Japan, or Japan, in Japanese?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was going to be like, it's weird that the spirits are speaking a language.
There were actually, so I will tell you that in this, in the EVPs that they had on YouTube, I am not a person that is afraid of pretty much anything. I'm too dumb to be afraid. 100% will tell you that. There were EVPs that I didn't even put on this list because they creeped me out so bad. And it was from
like
this.
What?
There was things like, you know what? I'll tell you later. It's like super inappropriate. So.
Okay.
I don't want to.
Inappropriate?
Yeah.
Inappropriate for this show?
Yeah, we're PG-13. That's true. All right. So it was things like, it was talking about his possession, and there was like a lot of Satan speak, and there was a lot of like, I fuck your mother, and like.
What is it? Is he playing Xbox?
I kill your mother's soul. And there was like a lot of really crazy shit that was said in the forest.
Huh.
Do you think there would be.
Skin you alive? Like, Jesus Christ. No, we're going to.
Is Satanism practiced in Japan?
I don't know.
I mean, they don't really have Christianity. They have
Buddhism.
No, it's not
okay,
Buddhism.
So everything is practiced everywhere. Is it super popular? I would say no for both of them. But
if I'm going to pick a place where Satanism is practiced, it's not going to be Japan.
Yeah, there is the Church of Satan is there. The Church of Scientology is there. Church of the Subgenius.
I'm sorry, Japan. I am sorry that this Church of Scientology has made its way to you.
Well, and there are like all kinds of, you know, evil spirits in, you know, Japanese culture.
Yep.
Well, and
maybe there's
and
money.
I was just going to say that, you know, with that kind of place where people were going there to commit suicide from just sort of a, you know, just from what I believe, when people are at their lowest and they're turning their back from whatever, you know, positive thing there is, I mean, whether you believe in God or whatever, I mean, for me, when you are not believing in God or you're kind of forsaking God at that moment or cursing God, that is when Satan is going to really come at you because you're at your weakest. So in a place like this where people come and they are suicidal or they're feeling down, that is an opportune moment for, I would say, you know, Satan or, you know, evil spirits or something, whatever you want to say, to prey on that person. And to, you know, yeah, no, you're no good. No, you know,
I mean, that's,
fuck you,
that's
kill yourself, you know.
That's one of the theories as far as what leads people to that decision. Is that because of vulnerability, evil spirits can more easily manipulate. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, I think that's spot on. No, I think that's spot on because I think that, like I said, I think when you're in that vulnerable place, I mean, that's why one of the things that one of my really good friends always says is when things start going wrong, she says, I'm not going to let Satan steal my joy. You know, it's it's that whole thing where it's like, you know, when things start going wrong and you can really start looking at, you know, how bad things are and sort of get in that rut, you know, don't let Satan steal your, she says, I'm not going to let Satan steal my joy. I'm not going to let that perpetuate and lead me down a path that's no good.
Oh, well, you know, whatever it takes to get you to a happy place.
Yep. Whatever it takes. It could be music, it could be religion, it could be poetry, it could be whatever you want.
It could be yelling in the middle of the forest with hot dogs surrounding you and possums. Who knows?
It could be that.
While wearing a flannel onesie.
And screaming.
Yep.
All right. So let's continue, Johnny.
Take it home, Big Daddy.
Yeah. So Johnny Paranormal, throughout the course of his investigation, so I guess it's just a him, huh?
Yeah,
it is a Johnny Paranormal.
It's definitely his name. It's definitely his name then.
Hi, I'm Johnny Paranormal.
Yeah, like
so
Johnny
in
Bravo.
The course of this investigation, Johnny continued to capture video evidence as well, including glowing eyes, orbs. At this moment, you can see this orb leaving my body. And at this moment, I feel a sense of relief. Mysterious lights and a wispy figure. After the investigation, Johnny said that he believes the spirits in Aokigahara can mimic any voice or accent, and that it gave him chills. Ooh. Chinese fireball.
Harry Potter. So... that is, those are our stories.
I gotta just say, I looked up Johnny Paranormal, and in my head, he was like some sort of love child of Johnny Bravo and Johnny Knoxville. He looks like neither. He just looks like...
man, I'm pretty.
He just looks like your average middle-aged white dude with a baseball hat.
I think it's like, if you're going to be a full-on paranormal investigator, you have to have a baseball hat.
Yeah, he looks really normal. Like,
he looks like he's a...
your average dude at a AAA baseball game.
Yeah, yeah, he really does.
And that's why he appeals to people. He's the, you know, he's the everyman.
Is that what it is?
Johnny,
you better look out. He might be edging in on Josh Gates, Chris.
I mean,
just paranormal everyman.
I don't paranormal everyman. Josh, I can give you things he can't, like humor.
Daniel,
I'm funny.
Yeah, funny.
Just because you have to deal with my antics 24/7 doesn't mean they're not funny. You've just gotten bored of them.
I can't wait for us to do Hoyabachu one day, Carrie. Oh, Hoyabachu.
Oh.
But that is the end of our episode on Aokigahara. So, does anybody have anything they would like to add before we get the hell out of here for this week?
Seek help. there are ways out.
Ways to stay in.
Opt in. Always opt in.
I was going to say, I think it'd probably be good to give that hotline number again. It's if anybody's out there and, you know, feeling like you need to talk to somebody here in the United States, the suicide prevention hotline number is 1-800-273-8255.
Thank you, Stacey.
Yeah, we're trying to find it.
Yep.
We're just scrambling through it.
Chat, text, whatever. And if you need help trying to find resources, then we're happy to help you. Just hit us up on Facebook and let us know that you need help and what your problem is. And we're happy to direct you to people that are more professional than us and can definitely help you. More professional than Chris.
I actually am trained as for...
Don't call Chris. Hey, it's fine. We'll take care of you.
I'm actually trained as far as discussing, like, working people off that ledge.
I know you are.
Like, I've actually gone and trained for it.
You got that Air Force training.
I'm going to smack the
Chris, Christopher is a certified...
I'm a beautiful mind. My God damn it.
Yes, you are.
Bro. I mixed up mind and man.
Yes, you are.
Mayors.
Yeah, you're that. You're all that. Anyway, thank you so much for everyone who has been liking the page and hanging out with us. Let's get some conversation going. Let's talk through some things. So thank you for stepping on over to Freaks and Geeks and giving us a like if you have already done so. And if you haven't, again, go forth and conquer. That's all for me this week. Anybody else? Any alibis?
No.
Any alibis?
Chris, cool. Chris is a beautiful mind.
I'm a beautiful mind.
All right. Well, we'll see everyone next week.
Bye, guys.
See you next time. Stay alive.